Whistleblower Report, exposing lies, deceptions, and all that has assaulted our way of life. We must take back our freedom and live as God designed in a free America that honors our Constitution and our Creator. Our experts in medicine, ministry, law, military, environment, and education empower us to grow together as a nation. For such a time as this, the Whistleblower Report offers truth and solutions. Welcome to the Whistleblower Report. This is Dr. Lee for America with our international team, Dr. Mike Yeadon, former Pfizer vice president and now whistleblower, warning the world about the dangers of all of this COVID tyranny and the COVID shots, and Dr. Jonathan Gilthorpe from Sweden, who is a molecular biologist, researcher, and scientist. We want to discuss today with you all of the drumbeat of fear about avian flu and whatever other disease the powers that are trying to harm humanity decide to roll out in order to scare us into submission to yet another experimental mRNA vaccine, which is not a vaccine, but a bioweapon, and actually damages the human genome, the human immune system, the human endocrine system, and down the line, every organ system in the body has damage from these experimental mRNA technologies. And one of the things that's very striking is the way in which all of the responses rolled out on the public globally in a lockstep approach, led by the U.S. Department of Defense and the U.S. NIH, FDA, CDC, but also carried out by every regulatory agency and government in Western countries around the world, with only a few countries actually trying to stand against this lockstep orchestrated playbook of intentional damage. So today we want to review all of the steps that we could think of and that others have exposed and listed as well. And we wanted to discuss them with you to enumerate the playbook steps that were done to us during COVID to inflict maximum damage on human health and our freedom. And then we want you to make a note of those steps that were done then, because we're seeing all of them starting to come into play again with the avian flu. And this is something that you need to be aware of. This is asymmetric warfare. It is propaganda. It is lies and deception. And you need to be aware that there are simple treatments available with existing safe medicines, such as doxycycline, for avian flu, as we discussed in couple of earlier programs. You do not need to take an experimental vaccine. And in fact, we urge that you don't give in to it. But let's look at some of the steps that were deliberately done and inflicted on people around the world to cause maximum intentional damage to your health and your freedom. So let's start with Dr. Gilthorpe. You had some thoughts about what was done with the gain of function in creating the weaponized coronavirus. Coronaviruses, tell our listeners more about what they typically are and what they cause, and then the fact that that the basic coronavirus was weaponized in certain ways.
Yes, Dr. Lee, sorry, I had to find the unmute button there. Thanks for having us on the show again this week. It's great to be here. There's a lot of controversy now in certain circles about what coronavirus is and what SARS-CoV-2 is. But I mean, these are viruses that were identified in the 1950s, actually, as a contaminant of a rabbit population that was being used to grow the syphilis bacteria called Treponema pallidum in Stockholm in Sweden. And these rabbits had heart problems. So a very large number of the rabbits had cardiomyopathy, I think, or at least cardiac inflammation, cardiac damage. And over years, subsequent years, that they were using these rabbits to propagate this pathogen, which is a bacteria that causes syphilis, the rabbits got more and more heart disease. And so they sent samples from Stockholm over to Johns Hopkins, I think, where they first isolated the coronavirus. There will be people that think that it's not possible to isolate viruses, but let's just assume that it is. And so, you know, and this was actually patented by Ralph Baric, who is, you know, the person that really was very closely involved in weaponizing coronaviruses, with the Wuhan Institute, with Anthony Fauci, funding from NIH, with Peter Daszak from the Echo Health Alliance. They used this as an early model back in the 70s and 80s as a model for heart disease. And they were trying to use it to, find new treatments for damaged heart muscle, basically. So I think, you know, critically, then I asked myself at that time, when virology was fairly rudimentary compared to the now, where there's a lot more molecular diagnostic techniques around, is it really feasible that they didn't know that the spike protein was the part of the coronavirus that actually targeted the heart muscle and was responsible to a large degree for heart damage, given what we see now with mRNA vaccine damage or spike protein based spikeopathy vaccine damage? Anyway, it's a very large family of viruses, and many of them are totally harmless. And, you know, many cases of the common cold are coronavirus, and, you know, cases of COVID that people may have now are associated with coronavirus. So this is something that's been around since the 50s with a very sinister history, I would say, given what we know what's happened in the last 3 to 4 years. But if we jump forward, there was a very interesting Substack article by somebody called Dr. Toby Rogers. And Toby is, I think he's a health economist. He wrote his PhD in 2019 on the political economy of autism. So he's definitely, you know, expert in looking at disease modeling and the costs of diseases on society. And he put out a Substack this week. He also works at the Brownstone Institute, which writes some very good articles. So he wrote that every step of COVID was designed to inflict maximum harm. And in that, he's listed a large number of points. I'll just start with the first one, that splicing HIV sequences into a coronavirus, who even came up with an idea that sinister? And what he's referring to is that there are several sequences within the spike protein sequence, and these are present in the vaccine as well, which come from HIV. They're not very long. They're 5 or 6 amino acids, so 5 or 6 letters in a protein. But these are very key positions that make that spike protein in a way more pathogenic. So they lead it to be secreted and cleaved and to leave the cell more efficiently, and also to stabilize its structure. And this is on the top of a whole host of other sequences. If you look at the COVID SARS-CoV-2 viral sequence, there are many signs that this has been engineered in a lab. There's no way, I think, that this could have ever come from nature. I mean, maybe originated from a bat, but has been heavily modified by human hands. And that's where Ralph Baric comes in, because he, you know, talked about doing this as early as early 2000s and cloned the first coronavirus into a plasmid, which means putting it into a DNA backbone, means that you can replicate that viral sequence very easily in bacteria. And then if you transfect it into a cell line, which it will then produce that coronavirus and spit it out into the media. So, you know, this everything is out there, I would say, not totally clear, but many things are laid out on the table that start to connect the dots about what happened with SARS-CoV-2. And, you know, I don't think everyone that died under COVID died of SARS-CoV-2 at all, but I think a virus was released, and that was used then to propagate this fear pandemonium that we all witnessed. You can have your own view on that. It's totally okay. We should discuss this openly, whether that happened or not. But you know, at least the signatures are out there in the RNA sequences and DNA sequences in the world. I can hand it back over, Dr.
Yeah, I could. This is Mike Eden. I could just, you know, just continue the theme that there are a number of fear-based activities that either happened or were alleged to happen, and then became, you know, very prominent themes. And everybody will know if they've listened to me that I have a slightly different view of this. I personally don't think there was a, I don't think there was a pathogen release, but there was definitely large amount of background work done, and Dr. Guilforth has just rehearsed that really. There was a lot of background work done so that when this inverted commas pandemic, which I think didn't happen, was launched, that then once you started exploring, people would go, oh my word, look, all of this antecedent work they've been doing, this is it. So whether they actually did it, or whether they just said they did it, it had exactly the same effect. It produced panic and made it very difficult for non-scientists to understand what was happening. And when they looked at what scientists were writing, they would get exactly the message the government wanted them to see, which is, you know, fear that something really unpleasant had been unleashed on the world. And for sure it had. Personally, I think what they really unleashed was lies, censorship, and rapid rollout of inappropriate clinical diagnostic tests called PCR. You know, when you had a swab poked up your nose so close to your brain that, you know, you wonder why they were doing that. And then they would use a technique and claim you were positive or maybe you weren't. That was all inappropriate. And the inventor of the test, Carrie Mullis, had said, it's not an appropriate use of my technology to use that as a clinical diagnostic. So whether it was true or a lie, it was definitely sort of pushed mainstream. No critics were allowed to get their voices heard or even just to ask questions. And then massive rollout of this testing so they could proclaim, you know, this person's infected, this person's contagious. And then my point here is they then government after government imposed something called lockdown. Now, being a European, I hardly ever heard the word lockdown, but I knew that it came from the US prison system. It's what you do when it looks like the inmates are getting out of hand, and the forces that operate the jail, the prison, order a lockdown. All prisoners to go to their cells where they will be locked in so that order can be restored. Well, why do they use the word lockdown? Worldwide, I mean, in America, yeah, I could see you'd get the idea. It's like go behind your barricade. But in Europe, it made people like me think, this is an American-led activity. Why is my government using terms like lockdown and furlough? And they did do lockdown, even though no country, because I read about six of them, no country's emergency public health emergency response plan ever included lockdown or any other wording equivalent to quarantining the healthy population. That's never been done in history. It makes no sense whatsoever. All it does is smashes the economy, undermines people's social support networks, and cannot possibly do anything because it's the healthy that you know, I don't believe in contagion anymore in respiratory, but if for the purpose of the thought experiment, we say it does, it will be the healthy people that are not capable of infecting other people. Everyone knows you can't give others a disease you haven't got. bluntly.
Well, and Dr.
But
Yeadon, to be clear, the lockdown was never part of the US pandemic response plan either, because I had one of the military top people on our team who had designed and led the team that developed the United States pandemic preparedness response that they
amazing.
had used in 2017, and he led Colonel James Zitko.
Wow.
He led the pandemic response in using the pandemic plan in 2017, and he's given a number of programs that lockdown was never part of
Right.
the pandemic response until COVID. Now,
Yeah.
what I'd like to address, and I did treat people who were sick with respiratory illness, and I know that that was real. I know how sick they were. And so I don't question the existence of the respiratory illness. I treated too many patients during that time to know how sick they were. And the issue was not whether or not it existed, but the fact that the treatment was directed to wait until people got sicker and send them to the emergency room and use the fake PCR test or the false positive PCR test to admit them under the COVID protocol, which was a COVID death protocol,
Yeah. Yeah,
inflicting maximal harm.
just for
So,
avoidance of doubt, I'm not saying that people weren't ill. They were. Absolutely they were. What the record shows, though, is that there weren't more people sick than previously, and there definitely weren't more deaths than
well,
usual.
I would argue with that from the standpoint of what was happening here in the US, but nevertheless,
Okay, but well,
the
I
point
have looked
the
at the epidemiology and the data is exactly as I've stated. So
okay,
I
but what
don't
I
think that.
really want to focus on is the medical blockade
Yeah.
that was done that harmed people. This was the
Definitely.
intentional harm. Dr.
Definitely.
Rogers has
And
listed,
I agree
and
with
I
you.
am.
And that's true. And that I agree with you. And that's true regardless of the cause of their illness. Now,
Well,
I
let me
think they were
go over
lied
what
to.
some of those steps were
Yeah,
because I think our
absolutely.
listeners need to know that. It's more helpful for them to know what was blocked so that they can prepare for the next situation.
Absolutely. They gave patients and physicians the idea there was nothing that could be done for them. So more or less it's stay at home until you get so
Well,
sick you
that
can't.
was the lie
Yeah, that was the
because
lie.
they blocked the over-the-counter remedies that could help reduce early symptoms,
Right.
N-acetylcysteine, vitamin D, they minimized that. Zinc was hard to get. Other nutraceuticals that improved immune response and treated upper respiratory symptoms were discounted, devalued, and blocked from sale. They blocked access to hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and even said corticosteroids, nebulized
Yeah.
budesonide, and other
Crackers.
steroids were not helpful. All of these were lies, and all of these were blocking access to treatment we had used medically my entire career
Yeah. And
for
as
these
an
problems.
yes, I agree with you. And to amplify that, I think it's important the audience should know that throughout Dr. Lee's long career and other people's, it has never been the business of the drug regulator, FDA, or big wigs in the CDC to tell doctors what they can and can't do. Doctors have an obligation to do their best for their patient, do no harm, but do the best for their patient. And so Dr. Lee's outlined a list of things that she might consider, and yet she was told, don't do that. And if you do that, people have their careers damaged. So even the normal things they would do for a patient suffering from a modest or severe flu-like illness, they were told, don't do it. And that's outrageous. I think it's even been retrenched. I think permission has been, as it were, normal service has been reinstated in some ways, hasn't it, on some of these treatments. But
No,
it's, I'm
not
just,
really, not
has
here
it not?
anyway.
Yeah. But it's
No.
inappropriate, isn't it? It's inappropriate it's appropriate that the doctor makes the decision, not some central body.
Well, I think it was far worse. I think it was deadly. And
Yeah.
that is what killed a lot of people. But
Right.
the other thing that was done, and I again was involved medically in trying to rescue people trapped in hospitals. And these are some of the points that Dr. Toby Rogers was making, but we did hundreds of programs on all of this for the last 4 years. With the COVID death protocol was false positive PCR run at high cycles, admit under the COVID protocol, isolate people, restrict fluids, restrict food, over-medicate with midazolam, fentanyl, morphine in a respiratory compromised patient, which depressed respiration further, fluid restriction damaged the kidneys. Then they were given remdesivir to get a 20% payment on the whole hospital bill that the US government was paying. That became a bounty on people's lives. And that led to kidney failure, lung failure, more respiratory failure. And then they were put on a ventilator, which was high flow, 100% oxygen that caused more inflammatory damage to the lung and ultimately led to death. Then the hospital got a payment for someone who died under the diagnosis of COVID. So, all the way around, every single step was designed to prevent early treatment, restrict the meds in the outpatient environment that were safe and could treat early respiratory symptoms, get them into the hospital, falsely diagnose them with COVID, put them on the COVID death protocol, get money for the hospital, kill people, and then turn around and pay the morticians more money with a COVID diagnosis. Everywhere you turned, there were about 15 steps
Yeah.
that they were incentivized with government payments for that COVID diagnosis and the treatment that didn't work and killed people. The ventilators, the death rate in Texas for people on ventilators was over almost 89% if they were on a ventilator more than 96 hours. That's Medicare data.
Yeah.
And then when you start looking at some of the other things they did, and you and Dr. Gilthorpe can comment on these, look at all of the things that were done in the outpatient setting with people who were healthy people. They Gyms were closed, liquor stores were open, but churches and gyms were closed. Parks were
Exactly.
closed. People couldn't exercise. Well, what do you get when you exercise? You reduce inflammation and you oxygenate the body and you improve the immune response.
Definitely. Yeah, no, exactly. Regardless of how it was that the patient ended up as an inpatient, they were treated in a way that any informed neutral observer years earlier would have said that's going to increase the number of people who will die. There's no question. You've just passionately and accurately outlined, half a dozen or more steps, which if we'd been having this conversation, say, 10 years ago, and asked, is this going to reduce the number of people who would die or increase, you'd say it's going to increase it. And so there's no getting away from that. That is what was done. That I don't know exactly how those protocols were enforced. It seemed to me, looking both nationally in my own country where something very similar happened, but also internationally, this idea of lockdowns and masking and mass testing and so on, none of which belonged in any country's playbook for public health emergencies, and yet your armed services doctor who had also been involved in the planning. None of these things featured, and yet they were imposed everywhere around the world. And I remember thinking, well, wow, this points to a supranational plan, a force acting above the level of nation. Because everywhere I looked, each country had their own smorgasbord of inappropriate things, but they were doing many things in common that were all inappropriate and had never been talked about before. So, yeah, that's part of. For me, that was part of the evidence in spring 2020 that made me very concerned that something really seriously bad was going down. But as you said, people, I remember people in in England and Wales that were either cautioned by the police, certainly, scared by the police to go home. Some were fined merely for taking a walk. It's like they were healthy people taking a walk in the sunshine, and they were apprehended, maybe fined, and some famous occasion the police flew drones over them and then used loudspeakers to tell them, you're breaking the COVID laws, you need to go home. It's just literally so dystopian. And there were many things like this. Famously, churches were closed, but liquor stores were open, I think, is one of those examples that, if you've got people who are anxious and might need human company, should you give them another, half of vodka, or should they have a chance to go to a church if they do that regularly and pray? Well, they closed the churches,
Well,
and
exactly.
unfortunately,
And the pastors across
well,
America and around the world gave in to the government instead
I
of
know,
staying true to God. But
quite.
look at the other issues that we faced. We know that remdesivir was already toxic and caused over 50% mortality in the Ebola trials. Paxlovid had many, many serious side effects. It was expensive, useless, and ultimately deadly. And people who've gotten multiple courses of Paxlovid have a higher risk of long COVID in studies we've seen recently. But both of you, Dr. Gilthorpe, had a comment as well on some of the other things that were done. Look at all the propaganda and the firing and censorship and blacklisting of critical thinkers. Dr. Gilthorpe, your comments.
Yes, Dr. Lee. Well, I just want to add there to what you've just said, and people should be very aware of this, is that ivermectin, which is very successful in treating severe COVID, was blacklisted and rubbed into the dirt by the CDC, but they've since lost a court case that meant they had to remove all the fake tweets that they made joking about this being a horse dewormer. So that shows that actually COVID-19 could be treated with ivermectin, and that they have killed people because of their misinformation. And the other thing is that the reason I think Paxlovid and remdesivir were given emergency use, whereas these other treatments were not, they waited first to get the vaccines out, and then they emergency use authorized these two drugs. And this is because they actually promote mutations in the virus. If they're not 100, they're very toxic, they kill people, they've got a lot of side effects, but they also promote new variants. So, they were driving this whole cycle of new variants and lockdowns, and everyone should be scared again. By vaccinating with an inefficient vaccine that doesn't block transmission, and also giving these drugs that promote mutations in the virus that people might carry. And then moving on to the other things. Well, we did bring this up actually a couple of weeks ago when we talked about mind control and how many things that were done to promote this feeling of fear and separation in people and promote confusion, because in that state you will subconsciously try to preserve yourself, and your basically gut reaction is to make yourself feel safe, to make yourself feel part of the group, and to remove yourself from any potentially dangerous situation. So they, as you mentioned, Dr. Lee, they shut down gyms, they kept the liquor stores open, but they closed the churches
Well,
and
they even, how absurdly, they even closed parks and
and beaches
recreation
and beaches.
facilities and beaches, all of the things that we've always used in the past to get people outdoors, fresh air, breathe in fresh air, and get vitamin D through the sun exposure to your skin. And they stopped all of that and told people they needed to shelter in place in their homes, which was just horrific. All the
And
way
people that,
around. Sorry, go ahead.
sorry, Dorothy, I was going to say just, and anyone that questioned the narrative, especially someone that was of a relatively high status in their job, was fired or lost their job or was discredited. Mike was retired by then, I think, but he's also somebody that's been dragged through the dirt for the truth that he's spoken since day one. And there are very few people left actually that have been truthful the entire way through the COVID-19 pandemic.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And as we near the time for our break, let's just remind everyone that this playbook is being rolled out again with the avian flu and whatever other disease they are going to batter us with is coming as the next pandemic, as Bill Gates says, and you will take it more seriously. Well, let's stop the compliance with their playbook of lies and deception. In summary, as Dr. Toby Rogers pointed out in his Substack, things we've been discussing since the beginning of the COVID tyranny, actual science has been ignored. Every action by governments around the world for the last 4 years has destroyed our freedom and degraded the health of the public. COVID is a world war bioweapon, both in terms of the illness and the vaccine. And it was launched by the ruling class to depopulate and control humanity and destroy our lives and our economy and our freedom. That's the bottom line of the COVID playbook of intentional damage. So now, in the second half, we're going to look at what were some of the regulatory and legislative actions that set the stage during the Obama administration for all that unfolded during the COVID era. We'll be right back after the break. Check out our website at www.truthforhealth.org and check out all the nutraceuticals in our Truth for Health store.com. And stock up on those so that you have your healthy options to treat yourself at home if you get sick and keep your body healthy. We'll be right back after the break.
We live in a world full of disinformation, lies, and deceit, often from those institutions and individuals that we used to rely on and trust. In the chaos that surrounds us on a daily basis, it's difficult to find a place for truthful information and helpful guidance. Where can we turn for honest answers, critical solutions, and information that empowers us to be the person that God intended? The Truth for Health Foundation. The Truth for Health Foundation works every day to fight for your basic human rights. We have a track record of providing life-saving emergency actions that can improve your health and empower you with the tools to be safe, happy, and free to live your life. With over 100,000 supporters around the world, we are a critical voice of truth in today's world. We invite you to join our community of financial supporters so that we can continue to be your trusted partner for health, for life, for resilience. Join us today by giving now.
Hello, everyone. This is Lieutenant Mark Bashaw, U.S. Army and legal grant recipient of the Truth for Health Foundation. I want to give a huge shout out to the Truth for Health Foundation for helping me and my family over the past year with our legal battles. Recently, I was court-martialed for not participating with these experimental COVID-19 emergency use authorized products. If it wasn't for Truth for Health Foundation and all the support, I would definitely be in a worse spot. But because of all the support, I'm able to continue uniform service, fighting for what's right to protect the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
Welcome back to the second half of the Whistleblower Report. This is Dr. Lee for America with Dr. Mike Eden, Dr. Jonathan Gilthorpe, and we are talking about the COVID playbook of intentional damage coming again under the guise of avian flu pandemic and contamination of everything around us in all the fear-mongering that we're being battered with every day in the media. There's some new media release about oh, we've discovered avian flu in milk or cattle or chickens. And it just doesn't end. It's the drumbeat of fear to control you. And I reiterate, God does not give us a spirit of fear. So let's combat that fear with recognizing the tactics they're using and don't give in to them. And Dr. Gilthorpe, you had some information that was background about what took place during the Obama administration in the United States that set the stage for some of the actions that we've seen take place in the COVID tyrannical, dictatorial lockdown of the world.
Yes, thanks, Dr. Lee. Yeah, this is something that I picked up on Twitter this last week. It was a tweet by someone that goes by the pseudonym of Champagne Joshi, or Josh Walkos. And it reveals a very, very interesting thread. So what Josh tweeted out was a picture of a government document. And he wrote, while we have been worrying about the WHO pandemic treaty and the threats to liberty it poses, the United States government has a plan to seize control of the global health security agenda. $30 billion for a worldwide plan with cross-coordination between 70 governments, with U.S. agencies like the HHS and USAID taking the lead. So even if the WHO treaty fails, it doesn't mean the power grab goes away. Read the 64-page report and tell me I'm wrong. So we can post the links to that so people could go and look at it. I think it's very important. But essentially, what the thread then goes into is several comments by other people on that. And this shows that this idea of global health security, you know, always invert. When they say it's for your good, it's for your bad. When it's for security, it's actually to imprison you. And when it's health, it's actually sickness. If you start inverting everything, you'll get the way that we're being controlled, I think, by these heinous organizations like the HHS. But essentially, this terminology goes back to, it was never approved by the WHO or by the UN, who are the, you know, mother organization to the WHO. This was US military strategy from as long back as, I think, goes back to at least 2011 and the Obama administration. It was updated under Trump. So this is nothing that suddenly cropped up recently or with COVID. This has been in place a long time. And one of the replies to the tweet actually was an interview with a journalist called Jane Burgermeister Said in 2009, who said that they were planning to the event essentially with COVID-19 and vaccines already then. So she said, it will be the World Health Organization in charge of organizing the enforcement. It will happen at the same time, in parallel, in all countries. There is a secret biological war going on, biological warfare against civilians. Now, if you'd seen that in 2009, you would have probably thought Jane was a complete lunatic. But given what you know now and what we've talked about in the show, ask yourself if this is a long-term plan that's been rolled out. It fits very nicely with Sasha Latipova and Catherine Watts' analysis, showing that the legislation that enabled these emergency youth vaccines, which were not medical products but military countermeasures, to be deployed without any real oversight. They weren't medical products. They didn't need FDA authorization. That's just a sham. And it also goes back, 2009 was the year that the European Union changed the legislation in terms of making vaccines to enable a RNA or DNA product to be made as a vaccine without being regulated as a gene therapy or an advanced medical product. So that was also done in 2009. So there's an immense coordination here going on post 9/11 with the weaponization of first terror and then health. And now we're seeing that it's been rolled out. And the next thing will be climate change. So in this latest 2024 document from the United States government, one of the things that they list in that document as is one health approach in global health security, including climate change. This is a WHO term which is used to, you know, basically envelop anything. Any crisis in the environment can be classed as a health crisis. And the WHO, if the things go through at the end of March, end of May, if your governments don't reject the amendments to the IHRs, which have already been put forward, so it might even be too late at the end of May, we don't know. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors going on. But what it will mean is that they could shut you down, lock you in your house for climate change, very sunny day, you know, you name it. Tedros can lock you down for whatever. This, I think this is tremendous, Dr. Lee, because it's starting to uncover the pattern that we should have been aware of. Nobody knew this, or at least I was. Jane was aware in 2009, but we weren't. And so the more people that can read about this and inform others, the better.
Well, there were other aspects. Now, I did not know about that specific one in 2009, but there were other aspects that I was working on medically in 2009, 2010, that were aspects of the Obamacare healthcare law being rammed through in the United States that set the stage for what took place under COVID. The health czar, who was Ezekiel Emanuel for the Obama administration, is the author of the Complete Lives System medical rationing for people over age 50 that grew out of the Liverpool Protocol in England from the 1990s. And Ezekiel Emanuel had published papers on Complete Lives System in 1999 and 2009. He was the health czar for the Obama administration, curtailing the Medicare benefits for those over 65 and moving them into resources through Medicaid for younger people. The Independent Payment Advisory Board was created in the TARP legislation in 2009 to control delivery of medical care based upon people that were too obese or older or disabled or whatever the criteria was from the, quote, expert panel, end quote, they would be denied medical care. That grew out of the NICE board in England, the National Institute of Clinical Excellence, which has a nice name, but it was rationing care. In England, for example, if you had macular degeneration, you had to lose the sight in one eye before you could be given the drug Lucentis for the other eye. Medicare changes under Obama were modeled on what was going on under NHS in England and the Liverpool Protocol. Ezekiel Emanuel was the COVID czar behind the scenes in the Biden administration, also part of the rest of the Obama administration behind the scenes under the Biden administration. And that was where the mandates for the COVID shots and the intensification of the COVID death protocol has occurred, and payments to the hospitals increased. So there were a lot of aspects. It was in 2009 that medical records were mandated under the TARP legislation and further in Obamacare that passed in 2010 that became the electronic medical records for tracking people who were vaccinated or not, people's body condition, if you're obese, if you're diabetic, if you had chronic diseases. They know who you are and what you have in the government database in ways since 2009 that we never tracked nationally, federally before that. It was always tracked in insurance databases based on people who had a particular insurance plan, but there was never the federal database on every single person in the healthcare system like there has been since 2009. So these were all ominous changes that were put into place in 2009 and 2010 under Obama, who also opened our borders in the border surges from 2010 to 2015, bringing in unscreened illegals from multiple countries around the world and creating skyrocketing diseases in the United States that we had eradicated. Drug-resistant tuberculosis was a big one, and there were lots of others. So going to your point about what took place in 2009, there were a lot of things I was working on related to what was in the Obamacare and TARP legislation for the government to control health care. We were fighting to expose and get people to stand up against at that time. And every single one of those that was passed was used in the COVID damage in all the years that we've been seeing the damage in the hospitals and the restriction on access to proper medical care. It's really very chilling what you're bringing up about 2009 and the connections with work I was doing then.
Yeah, Dr. D. I mean, and Ezekiel Emanuel, I think, is highly tied into UPenn and into these various fact checkers that were involved in, you know, driving COVID and misinformation campaigns. So this is a network of very corrupt individuals that unfortunately have gained an enormous, powerful grasp over society, and we need to get them out. This is on a side point, but I noticed that one of a senior policy advisor to Barack Obama called Rahamin Shai this week or last week was charged with child sex offences. So I don't think rotten apples fall particularly far from the tree. And, you know, I think this is a very, very dark, potentially, in my opinion, a very, very dark organization, which have been, you know, putting us in this position to change society for the worse for decades. In the UK, it was Tony Blair. You know, he now has the Tony Blair Institute, having been proven of conducting war crimes by lying to Parliament to get Britain to go into the Iraq war under false pretenses. He has now, you know, this $800 million a year institute with many employees that's churning out, you know, global health policy and such things, regime change for civil Western society, essentially.
No, it's quite alarming. And as we summarize then all of the things that have been done in this orchestrated, organized, global, coordinated playbook of intentional damage to people around the world, and that they are using it again now, which is why we're trying to make people aware of all these aspects, all these steps, all these tactics. I know Dr. Yeadon has a powerful closing message about the dangers of the toxic by design mRNA shots.
Yes, sure. Thank you. Yes, it's very important. Regardless of, you know, nuances and differences, perhaps, and that'll be widespread across America and the world about what actually happened. What there is no doubt about is a couple of points. One is, it, ladies and gentlemen, it really is craziness to believe that one can invent, develop, test, manufacture, and gain approval for a complex, novel biological product called vaccines in 10 months or so. And I'm hearing they're talking about doing it in 100 days, something like that. Let me tell you, as someone who spent over 32 years in the industry, it's impossible. What they're telling you they're going to do is impossible. What follows from that statement is that's not what they're doing. They're not going to develop, test, manufacture, and get approval for anything that would classify as a vaccine. What they are doing is assembling a material that is an mRNA or gene-based product. That mRNA is going to, it'll code for something that doesn't belong in your body. That's what they do. And if you allow yourself to be injected with that, your body will manufacture the protein it's been told to make wherever the vaccine lands, and your body will realize it shouldn't be there, and your immune system will attack it. These These are not vaccines. They are intentionally harmful materials. And I think the whole kerfuffle about pandemics and fear and propaganda and so on, it's all designed to herd us towards the solution where we roll our sleeves up and either an innocent or a complicit person in the medical system. I'm not saying they all know what's happening. They don't. But somebody will, you'll roll your sleeve up and you'll be injected with something which I am telling you from my heart and my brain as a lifetime professional in this industry is designed to injure you. And I can't tell you that I didn't cry having warned about this before any of them were rolled out. And then I was seeing reports on Twitter and then seeing reports more formal. You know, I literally cried on several occasions because, and I don't want this to happen again. They're going to do it again. It's exactly the same playbook. They'll lie to you about some pathogen. I personally don't think there'll be a new disease, but either way, you'll be terrified if you listen to them. And the goal of the terror, ultimately, amongst other things, is to herd you into a position where you're voluntarily rolling your sleeve up to be injected with something that's designed to injure or kill you, and if you're a female, to reduce your fertility. That's what's happening. It's horrible, horrible, but I reached that conclusion during 2020. We're now in year five, and they're still coming at us. That's what they're going to do. Please don't allow yourself to be injected ever by these materials. That's what I would say.
Thank you so much, Dr. Yeadon. I know you've been saying this every chance you get, and every time we reach new people hear the warning and can choose to act to protect their health. It's urgent, everyone. The playbook is being used over and over again. Do not give in, do not comply, and do not take any more of these shots. This is Dr. Lee for America. Thank you for joining us on today's Whistleblower Report. Go to www.truthforhealth.org and check out all the resources we have in terms of our Truth for Health store, our nutraceuticals, our educational programs. Join our crusade, sign up for our newsletters, and come join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time for our Faith Over Fear community of people who are making a difference and sharing the truth.